If you want to begin turning into the book of 1 Samuel, chapter 21 and chapter 22 is where we're going to begin. And we're going to get back into our study of the priesthood of God, a study that we've talked about, the good and the bad of the priest. And this is all an effort to really reflect ourselves as Christians, but as priests as well. I think this is one of those metaphors, one of those avenues of Christianity that we often don't address. We don't think of ourselves as priests oftentimes. And so we want to think of ourselves as God's priests. We are a holy priesthood, Peter tells us. And we are to offer up holy spiritual sacrifices. And so we're going to talk about, as we have, a chronological order of the priest. And we have come to a priest by the name of Abiathar. And so we're going to talk about the good and the bad of Abiathar. And so as we do, I want to review just a little bit about what we've talked about in regards to Abiathar. Up here on the screen, you will notice that we have a good list of the priests. And we started with Aaron. We talked about his son Eleazar and then his son Phinehas. And then for some reason, we just don't have it recorded for us, the priesthood switched from the lineage of Eleazar, who should have been the one that carried it through, and it switched to the fourth son of Aaron, Ithamar, through Eli. And now, like I said, there is no record as to why that happened. But you might remember in the story of Eli, because he did not remove his sons from the priesthood when they were evil and sinful and were about the worst priest you could ever have, God said that he was going to remove the priesthood from Eli and bring it back over to the side of Eleazar. And so, what happened? Well, on one day, a terrible day, a dark day that we talked not too long ago about, a day that we might call Ichabod, Eli, Hophni, and Phinehas, the son of Eli, all die in a battle. The ark is lost. And so the next high priest we read about is Ahitub. And we talked a little bit about the good and the bad of Ahitub. And then his son took over, Ahijah. And there's a little debate about Ahijah, whether he is the same man as Ahimelech. And there are some that believe he is. There are others believe that Ahimelech is the brother of Ahijah, and that after Ahijah died, Ahimelech took over. That's the way you can see this particular creator of this chart believes it to be. So either way, we talked last time about Ahimelech. We'll talk a little bit about him tonight as we move into Abiathar, his son, the good and the bad. Now, to get us to where we want to be, we've got to talk a little storytelling, if you will, about 1 Samuel chapter 21 and 22. At this time, Ahimelech, the father of Abiathar, is still high priest, and King Saul is reigning. And David has just started to run away for his life as Saul seeks to kill him. And you might remember 1 Samuel chapter 21, David came to the high priest Ahimelech, who was at the tabernacle, which was at that time in the city of Nob, N-O-B, the city of Nob. And David did not tell Ahimelech, the high priest, that Saul wanted him dead. Instead, he told Ahimelech that in fact he was on a special mission from the king, and that all was well. And so Ahimelech did not know anything was awry with David or Saul, or that anything that he should be suspicious or careful of dealing with Saul in any way. And on that particular day, he helped David with some bread, the consecrated bread that had been removed from the tabernacle on the Sabbath. And he gave that to David and his men. He also gave him the sword of Goliath. And David went on his way. Well, in chapter 22, when Saul learned of Ahimelech's actions, the paranoid, evil Saul came to the city of Nob to find out why Ahimelech had stabbed him in the back. He believed Ahimelech helped David as a traitor, even though Ahimelech did not know anything of the dispute between Saul and David. And so, filled with rage through a man by the name of Doeg, Saul ordered the death of the high priest Ahimelech. And not only did Doeg kill Ahimelech, he killed all the priests that were there at Nob serving the Lord, a total number of 75 priests. It was, if you could put it this way, a holy bloodbath. And I want us to, with that in mind, begin our story, chapter 22, and verse 20, because there is one priest, and one priest only, that escapes this Sunday bloody Sabbath. I can't, or maybe we should call it bloody Sabbath. In verse 20, but one son of Ahimelech, the son of Ahitub, named Abiathar, he escaped, and he fled to David. And Abiathar told David that Saul had killed the priest of the Lord. Now, imagine what David felt like when he heard those words, knowing that he had not been truthful to Ahimelech. And in verse 22, David said to Abiathar, I knew on that day, I knew when I saw Doeg the Edomite was there, that he would surely tell Saul, I have brought about the death of every person in your father's household. David felt incredibly guilty about it and took the blame on himself. And so he said to Abimelech, stay with me, do not be afraid, for he who seeks my life now seeks your life, for you are safe with me. And so Abiathar, as we see sometimes in these bloody, bloody scenes, that there is one that God saves. There is a remnant of one person that God saves. And in this case, in this story, it is Abiathar. In chapter 23 and in verse 9, Abiathar will be called the priest. And I believe it's a reference that not only was he a priest, that he had now become the high priest. And so David has the high priest traveling with him, staying with him, serving him, as well as serving the Lord. And that means Saul has no priest. He's killed them all. He has no high priest to inquire of God, but it would do no good, you might remember, because God has left Saul. He's rejected him, and he is not answering any of his prayers or inquiries at all. But part of that was Saul's doing as well. And so what do we have? As we talk about the good of Abiathar, look, if you would, at chapter 23, and let's continue reading in verse 1 and verse 2. Then they told David, saying, behold, the Philistines are fighting against Keilah. And they are plundering the threshing floors. Now, I want to set the stage here, a little more storytelling, if you will. David learns that Israel's arch enemy, the Philistines, are going after an Israelite city called Keilah. It's an Israelite city very close to the border of the Philistines. And the Philistines are not only attacking the people and its city, they are plundering the threshing floors. In other words, they are taking and destroying or taking away their food supply. And David hears of it. And in verse 2, David inquired of the Lord, saying, shall I go and attack these Philistines? And the Lord said to David, go and attack the Philistines and deliver Keilah. Now, I want you to understand this. This is like a David and Goliath moment. How so? David inquires of God, should I go and fight these Philistines? Remember, Goliath was a Philistine.
Now, who is it that really should be going to save the people of Keilah from the Philistines? It's Saul. Saul is the king. Saul controls the army. One of his people, or a group of his people, are in danger. He should be bringing the army down. But where is he? He's nowhere to be found. Doesn't that sound a lot like the late David and Goliath? Who was it that should have been Israel's champion? It should have been Saul. Saul was head and shoulders above the rest. Saul had already led them into victory several times. Saul was their king. He should have been the one, but again, just like in David and Goliath, Saul is nowhere to be found, but he will later. He later will go to Keilah, but you'll notice, what is it that motivates Saul to finally take an army down to Keilah? Well, hold on to that thought. And so just like the taunting of Goliath, it is David that comes to the rescue. But before David takes a step, what does he do? He goes to God. He brings God to the picture. He inquires of the Lord. And this is one of the good points of Abiathar. Abiathar makes it all possible for David to do this the way David wants to do it. Not only to inquire of God, but to actually get the answer from God. You say, well, how is that? I don't see Abiathar anywhere in here. Well, drop down to verse 6. Chapter 23, verse 6. Now, it came about that when Abiathar, the son of Ahimelech, fled to David at Keilah, that he came down with an ephod in his hand. Now, what is that? That ephod is a priestly part of the priestly garment, and probably is that which contains that weird Urim and Thummim, in which the priest would inquire of God for a particular person or for themselves, and God would respond somehow manipulating the Urim or the Thummim. And we're not exactly sure how all this worked. Many people believe that there was a yes or no question, and almost like rolling the dice, there was a yes, there was a no, and God would manipulate that. And that might be the case. We're going to take a look at how David asks these questions and how God answers them a little bit later. But Abiathar makes it possible for David to inquire of the Lord. Because not only did he flee, but before he left, he grabbed this ephod so that David could inquire of the Lord. As a priest, that makes all sorts of sense. That was one of the things that you expect of a priest, that they would encourage anyone, especially the king, especially a man going into battle, especially any man that had some important decision to make, to not take a step until they go and inquire of God. I want to ask you, as God's priest, as we are, do we encourage others to inquire of the Lord? You know, I know in a lot of jobs we might feel a little bit scared of talking religion to people. We might kind of wonder how we can do that. But would it be all right if someone's talking to us about something going on in their life and we encourage them, well, have you prayed about it? And maybe that's a way we can open a door. But as a priest, that's one of the things that should be the first step, is bringing God into the decision-making process. Bringing God into that particular life. And that's what Abiathar does. It's a great lesson for us. And let me ask you second to that. Maybe if we're not doing that as much as we should, maybe it's because we're not doing that ourselves. I got to tell you, there's been times in my life, and not too long ago, where I have something going on of importance, some big, you know, decision to make, and maybe you're like me, I just take a whole lot upon myself and I just kind of, I can figure this out. I can get through all of this. And maybe you and I can do that. But maybe the question is, should we do that? When we bring God into the decision-making process, when we bring Him into our life, what are we doing? Ever think about that? We're bringing God, who is almighty, all-powerful, who can see things beyond we can ever see, who can see the future. And not only that, we're bringing a God who loves us. As Jesus Himself talked about, you know, you have these fathers that you ask them to give you these gifts and they don't bring you a snake. They give you these good gifts. How much more your Heavenly Father will give to you when you ask of Him. And third to all of that, we've got this most powerful God that I don't know how He does it, but through His providence, He can bring and manipulate things so that the right people are at the right place at the right time to do the right thing, and He never takes away their free will. It's God's providence. Now, when you think about it that way, would you ever want to take a step without inquiring of God? Surely you'd want someone like that being part of the decision-making process. And so, as God's priests, let us inquire of God before we take any step. And not just in big decisions. What do? We pray to God every day, don't we? And the more effective prayers of each and every day are those prayers that we really are thinking about what God can do for us. And sometimes, as God's priest, it's just a prayer of thanksgiving. It's a prayer of recognizing what God has done for us. And so when I think of Abiathar, I think about how not only did he flee to David and help David and serve David, but that he made it possible for David to inquire of God. And when David was successful, in every single case it was when he first inquired of God. I want to stay in this story. Abiathar is involved in the story. It's a little more about David and his men. But I want to look at this story a little bit deeper because I think there's another great lesson that comes out of this. Let's go back to verse 1 and 2, chapter 23. David inquired of the Lord, and the Lord said what? Go down to Keilah and help them. And so David comes to his men and he says, hey, get ready for battle. We're going to go down to Keilah. We're going to fight these Philistines. And God says, go and do it. And look at the reaction of David's men. Very honest, very truthful. But David's men said to him, verse 3, behold, we are afraid here in Judah. How much more then if we go to Keilah against the ranks of the Philistines? They said to David, David, hold on a second. I like your being honest. We're afraid right here in home. We're in Judah and our knees are shaking. How much more are we going to be afraid to go down and to fight the Philistines in Keilah? And so they tell David, we're afraid. We're not sure we want to do this. And so David says in verse 4, look at his reaction. So what does David do? David doesn't call them a bunch of yellow-bellied scary cats. David what? David inquired of the Lord once more. And the Lord answered him, said, arise, go down to Keilah, and I will give the Philistines into your hand. So David comes back to his men, and he says, God says, we can do this. And so you have kind of this 12 spies bringing back the report. And David is like Joshua and Caleb, and he says, listen, if God says He is for us, and if God is for us, we can do this. I want to ask you, you ever have a situation where you just don't want to do something? You're just kind of afraid. Be honest, you're just afraid. Or maybe the situation is just going to be uncomfortable. It might even be a little bit humbling or embarrassing, and you just rather not do it. But then when you really look at it, I'll
signs point to God saying, this is the right thing to do. You need to do it. This is what you got to do. As painful or as fearful as you are, or it will be, you've got to do it. You think about a situation like that right now? Maybe even evangelism. I think about being afraid. I think about trying to teach others about Jesus. Sometimes that's not always easy. Sometimes we all get afraid of talking to others about Jesus or about their life. We're afraid of how they'll react. We're afraid what they might do to us. We all can relate to that. Here's David's men. They're afraid. And David says, I inquired of God twice. And God says, do it. And so what does David's men do? Look at verse 5. So David and his men went. And I want to just emphasize that. They went. God said, go. And they went to Keilah. And they fought the Philistines. And they led away their livestock. And they struck them with a great slaughter. And thus David delivered the inhabitants of Keilah. David's men fought their fears and they put their trust in God. And they were victorious. And as God's faithful children and as God's priest, we've got to do the same. We've got to fight our fears. It might be a situation where we just want to avoid the conflict. I'm like that. I'm a conflict-avoidant person. If I can avoid it, I want to do that. Maybe you're like me. But there are times where you just got to go and you got to do what you do and you got to do the right thing because God says it's the right thing. It's not the easy thing. The right thing is almost always never the easy thing. And so what do? We muster up the courage. We muster up the faith and the trust in God. And I would imagine in most cases, if not all, we find out it wasn't as bad as we thought. Or eventually it turned out for the better because God was involved in all of it. And keeping with that first point, maybe the first thing we want to do before we go into that difficult, fearful situation is inquire of God. David did it twice. Maybe we need to do the same.
So I want to look at a second part of this story. You know what David did? David and his men came down and he saved the people of Keilah's bacon, if I can put it that way. He saved their city. He saved their lives. He saved their food supply. And how did they repay him? Well, look at verse 7. When it was told Saul, we're back to King Saul. When it was told Saul that David had come to Keilah, Saul said, God has delivered him into my hand, for he has shut himself by entering the city with double gates and bars. And so, look at what Saul now does. Saul summoned all the people for war. Let's go down to Keilah. Let's besiege David and his men. Here comes Saul, not to save the people of Keilah, but to kill David. And he thinks he can take him by surprise and surround the city. And just lock up David. And if he can do that, he's got David. He didn't want to help the men of Keilah. But he'll rally the army to go get David. That's the kind of man that Saul is at this time. But here's the problem. David finds out about the plans of Saul. And look at verse 9. Now David knew that Saul was plotting evil against him, and so he said to Abiathar the priest, bring the ephod here.
There you go.
He says to Abiathar, bring the ephod here. Why? Because I want to inquire of God. And David's going to ask God two questions. God's going to answer the second one first, the first one last. But look at verse 10. Then David said, O Lord God of Israel, your servant has heard for certain that Saul is seeking to come to Keilah and destroy the city on my account. And here's the first question. Will the men of Keilah surrender me into his hand? And second question, will Saul come down just as your servant has heard? O Lord God of Israel, I pray, tell your servant. And the Lord said, he will come down. So you have these two questions And they both can be answered with like a yes or a no. And that's why some people think this Urim and Thummim were kind of a yes or no thing. So he answers the second, will Saul come down? And God says, yes, he will. And then, verse 12, David repeats the first question, will the men of Keilah surrender me and my men in the hands of Saul? And the Lord said, yes, they will surrender you.
I want you to
get this. David had just saved Keilah. He has risked his own life. He has saved their bacon. And how do they repay him? He learns from God that if Saul does get down there, the men of Keilah will just give him over to Saul. They'll betray him. They'll stab him in the back.
And so David and his men get out of Dodge. They get out of Keilah. They run away as quick as they can. And by the time Saul gets there, they're gone. No thanks to Keilah. Now I want to ask you, do you ever have someone, maybe a friend, maybe you've been a friend a long time, and then they turn on you, stab you on the back? Maybe there's someone you've really helped, and maybe it was even someone you didn't really want to help, but you took the time and you were a good Christian and a priest of God, and you sacrificed your time to help them out, and how do they repay? They stab you in the back. You're thinking of a situation right now? We've all had those. Those are the times where we really want revenge. And why do we want revenge? Because we want those people to feel the same way they made us feel. We want them to realize how much they hurt us. Not just by what they did, but the fact that they don't even realize all that we did for them. That's exactly what we have here. The men of Keilah were not very honorable men in those days.
But I want to ask you this question. Did David seek revenge?
Did David ever come back and say, I'm going to get you? Remember what he said to the foolish man Nabal? When he got upset with Nabal, he was going to go kill Nabal. Thankfully, Abigail stopped him and talked some sense into him. But David never seeks revenge. And God throws mercy and grace upon the men of Keilah because he never tells David to go and do anything to them like he did the Amalekites. And I think there's a good lesson in that. We're well aware of what Jesus taught about trying to get revenge. We are to turn the other cheek. We are to return evil with not more evil, but with good, Romans chapter 12. We are to leave the wrath to God, for he will repay. David, in all the days that he was fleeing with his army, he didn't come back. What about when he became king? Finally, he's in charge, he's got the army, he can do whatever. He never does. And maybe God knew something about the future of Keilah. In the days of David, they were not honorable. But the men of Keilah come back to the Bible years and years and years later. After the time of captivity, in the days of Nehemiah, the men of Keilah are mentioned as being one of those groups that helped rebuild the walls of Jerusalem. And remember how they built those walls? Half of the company built and worked, while the other half guarded with weapons. These were men of honor, men of courage, men of faith. They were not that way in the days of David, but later on, things changed. And so here's a story that appears to be, as generations went on, those particular people and their children, their grandchildren, their great-grandchildren, became more honorable and became more righteous and more faithful. And we don't always read stories like that in the Bible. And I think it's worth pointing out. All because God gave them mercy and David didn't seek revenge. There's a reason the Bible teaches to turn the other cheek. That's the good of Abiathar. But let's close tonight by talking about the bad. And unfortunately, there is a story about the bad of Abiathar. And that story starts with, for some reason, 2 Samuel. And that kind of gives you an idea of how long Abiathar was with David. Now we're all the way in 2 Samuel chapter 8. And in verse 17, all of a sudden, we read about another high priest joining the high priest of Abiathar. In verse 17, in telling us about David's staff, it says, "And Zadok the son of Ahitub, and Ahimelech the son of Abiathar were priests, and Seraiah was the secretary." Now, there is some apparent scribal error there, or some debate, because he talks about Ahimelech as the son of Abiathar, and it really should be the other way around. But nevertheless, now you have two high priests. Zadok one, and Abiathar the other. And we're not told why that happens. You remember in the New Testament there were two high priests, Annas and Caiaphas, and we know why that happened. But we don't know why. And some have believed that Zadok is actually from the descendant of Eliezer. And that God is now slowly but surely planning to move, because of Eli's sin, the kingdom, the high priesthood, over to Eliezer once again. And that might be the case as we look at the bad. So, all throughout the days of David, Abiathar and Zadok are faithful to David. They are faithful as he becomes king. They are faithful even in the days when Absalom takes the kingdom. In fact, both Abiathar and Zadok are left in Jerusalem. They want to go with David. In fact, they take the Ark of the Covenant with David, and David says, "You all go back." But you know what? They weren't only high priests, they were spies for David. They sent messages to David about Absalom, what was going on. And they are a very big reason, because of their faithfulness to David and God, of why he is able to overcome all of this tyranny from Absalom. And so they've been with David a long time. They've been faithful. But Absalom was not the only son that tried to steal the kingdom away from David. Remember that? David, in his older days, as he is on his deathbed, declares Solomon will be king. And he has a son by the name of Adonijah, who was born after the time of Absalom. And Adonijah starts becoming king. He starts to fit the role, or look the role of a king. In fact, go over to 1 Kings. And again, now Abiathar is in 1 Kings chapter 1 and in verse 5. And look at what we read. "Now Adonijah the son of Haggith," that's one of David's wives, "he exalted himself, saying, 'I will be king.' And so he prepared for himself chariots and horses and men with 50 men to run before him. And his father had never crossed him at any time by asking him, 'Why have you done so?' And not only that, he was a very handsome man, and he was born after Absalom." And look at this. All in this facade to look like a king and to become a king, he now confers with some of David's men, and he conferred with Joab, the son of Zeruiah, and he conferred with Abiathar, the priest. And following Adonijah, they helped him. Two of David's most faithful men, Joab, his long-time general, betrays David and goes to Adonijah. And with him goes Abiathar, the high priest. And look at verse 8. But Zadok the priest, and Benaiah the son of Jehoiada, Nathan the prophet, Shimei, Rei, and the mighty men who belonged to David were not with Adonijah. And so in the end, Abiathar stabs David in the back. Says, I don't want Solomon to be king. And he goes and he helps Adonijah in his coup attempt. Well, as you get to chapter 2, we skip forward as we bring the lesson to a close. And our last lesson tonight, Adonijah's coup attempt did not succeed, for it was not of God. Solomon takes the throne, and now Solomon is bringing justice to the kingdom. And so in chapter 2, Solomon kills Adonijah for his betrayal. He also kills Joab, the longtime faithful general of David. Think about how that life ends. And now as we get to 1 Kings chapter 2, and let's look, if you would, at verse 26 and 27. Solomon calls for Abiathar. And to Abiathar the priest, the king said, go to Anathoth, to your own field, for you deserve to die. But I will not put you to death this time, because you carried the ark of the Lord God before my father David, and because you were afflicted in everything with which my father was afflicted. And so Solomon dismissed Abiathar from being priest to the Lord in order to fulfill the word of the Lord, look at this, which he had spoken concerning the house of Eli and Shiloh. And so, Abiathar is removed from the priesthood, and he is exiled to his own land, his own home of Anathoth. And it appears by the wording that God began removing the priesthood from Eli's family. And perhaps Zadok, who does not go with Adonijah, who now becomes the sole high priest, perhaps that's the family of Eliezer. And so what is our last point that we want to make tonight? And that is this. It is important how you run the race. It really is. But it makes no difference of how you run the race if you don't finish the race. And I don't mean just finish the race. I mean finish the race strong. Finish the race on the right side. I love the author of Hebrews chapter 12, who talks about Christianity as a race. And he says you have to run the race well, but you have to finish the race. And in order to finish the race, you have to race the race well. And you have to remove every encumbrance from you. And you have to fix your eyes on that goal and prize, which is Jesus Christ. And as I look at Abiathar, there are all sorts of questions I have. A man who was so faithful to God, not to mention David, for years and years and years, who was afflicted, as Solomon said, with all the things of David, all the struggles, all the trials, and yet remained faithful, but didn't finish the race as the high priest or in David's corner. We need to run the race well. We need to fight the fight. But we need to finish the race. And so we need that endurance. We need that endurance to stay faithful all the way to the end. We need to have that resolve that we will do God's will and not our own. And perhaps that's where Abiathar went wrong. He didn't care who God wanted to be king. He didn't care what David wanted. He wanted Adonijah. And so as a result, he fought against God. And so tonight, as God's priest, let us learn from these great lessons. Let us be like the men of David and fight our fears and trust God. Let us be faithful to God like Abiathar was. Let us not seek revenge against those who have stabbed us in the back. And let us run the race well. And let us run it with endurance, faithful to the end. we can help you do that or come back to Christ or get back in the race, won't you let that be known tonight as together we stand and as we sing.